Thanks a lot, Allison, and thanks to the organizers. Were any of you in Denver 2 years ago? I gave a talk in Denver a couple of years ago, and I tell you, I'm really surprised you invited me back. So there I was a little critical about the current status of DNA technology. Things have changed very quickly. Any of you seen that photo that's up on the slide? Any of you read Science Magazine? Any of you know what Science Magazine is? It's the most prestigious scientific journal in the world. And last Friday, 1 week ago, bovine genomics went big time. And the reason we went big time is that two papers were published in that journal back to back. The one on the left describes the genetic variability within breeds of cattle, the relationship between breeds of cattle, and the one on the right describes the sequence assembly, the genes, the function of those genes within the bovine genome. They're very interesting papers. I have copies of both of them. If any of you would like to get a copy to have a read through this stuff, my email address is taylor@missouri.edu. Send me an email, catch me afterwards, I'll send these things to you. They're good reads. I usually like to talk quickly, so I need to give some acknowledgements to some people as we go through this talk. The stuff that I'm going to show you today really reflects the work of a large number of people. And this group right here is a very important group of people. And I would like to encourage all of you in the audience, if you see any of these people, drag them aside and buy them a beer. The reason for that is this is the group of people that built the bovine SNP50 chip. And that was really, I think, a very substantive piece of work, and it has really had an enormous impact on both the dairy and the beef cattle industries worldwide in terms of genomic selection. I also need to thank all of the people that are in my lab and a lot of cows that have kind of helped this project by willingly donating DNA to the work that we've done. In particular, Bob Schnabel in the top there. Is a really important person in my lab and has done an enormous amount of work to be able to bring us to where we are today and to share some of the data that we have with you guys. So you know what SNPs are. Mike already defined what SNPs are. They're just points in the DNA that are variable. If we went out and sampled chromosomes from individual cows in the population and we lined them all up, what we'd find is about every 300 bases, we'd find one of these points that's variable within the DNA. So there's a lot of them out there. Most of them don't do anything. They're just points in the DNA that are variable. But what's really cool about these things is that there's an awful lot of them. In humans, we know about 11 million so far. We did an experiment to build the bovine SNP50 assay, in which basically what we did was we got a whole bunch of volunteers over here. Here are my volunteers. We got them to line up, walk into this machine, deposit a little bit of DNA in this machine. We generated about 60 million DNA sequences on these individuals, and from that we found about 62,000 SNPs. They went on to the bovine SNP50 chip. We've since done this for pigs, and I'm part of a consortium that's just been through an exercise in pigs where we've generated 375,000 SNPs. And as Mike indicated, there's another international effort running right now, which I think will generate about 5 million SNPs by the end of the year. We're already at about 2.5 million SNPs known in cattle. What's really cool about that is the rate at which technology advances. So down here, see this is Jim Womack's SNP chip from Texas A&M University circa about 5 or 6 years ago. But right now, this is the bovine SNP50 chip, and this has 12 little slots on it. Each of those slots interrogates 50,000 SNPs. You can actually now go to 200,000 SNPs. See that slot right there? You can put 200,000 SNPs in that slot. This is where you'd load the DNA sample for animal 1, animal 2, animal 3, and you generate 12 sets of SNP genotypes on animals. Alternatively, what you can do is you can put 50,000 SNPs here, a different 50,000 SNPs here, a different 50,000 SNPs, load the DNA from one animal on this chip, and you can get a million genotypes for one animal in about 3 days' worth of work. And the cost is relatively inexpensive. Relatively, about $200. So how do we currently? So now let me build the relationship between what we do currently to estimate EPDs and where this is going. So you should have all seen these equations. You know, BIF has been all about this for about the last 30 years, 38 years, I think. This is Henderson's mixed model equations, and this is basically where I grew up at Cornell, basically in the early 80s, where what we do is take, man, I'm going to use this. So what we do, and I'll come back over here, is we take data on individuals in that Y vector there. We take pedigree information and we put it in that matrix over there. The heritability goes in there. We crunch this thing and what we end up with is a set of breeding values. On this side, that's where your data goes. So that's marbling scores. That's the heritability of marbling that goes in there. That's the relationship among all the individuals. And bang, that's where your EPDs come out in this system. Works extremely well. But it works extremely well when, A, your pedigrees are accurate, and B, you've got a lot of marbling scores, right, on animals. If you don't have a lot of marbling scores on animals, you get low accuracies. If you don't have any observations on the trait, you don't get any EPDs or any accuracies. And that's why we don't have EPDs for things like feed intake, right? Be nice if we could get EPDs on a trait like feed intake. Well, what that relationship matrix is, it says on average, what would we expect the degree of relationship between two animals at the level of their DNA to be? That's what the pedigree information says. It says on average, how much DNA should they have identical by descent? Well, if you can genotype animals with a whole bunch of SNPs, so here's two animals, here's two bulls right here, bull A, bull B. Can't draw all 30 of their chromosomes up there, but I can spread out 50,000 or 40,000 SNPs through the genome, and those SNPs generally come in two different forms. You get an A allele or a B allele. And what I can do is I can go at each one of these loci and say, is this bull the same or different to that bull? And average it right across the genome and find out exactly how much DNA those two animals have that are identical by descent. And if you do that, you can compare the pedigree relatedness among individuals with what they truly are related at the level of their DNA. And you can get something like this. So this is a plot on this axis of the pedigree relationship, and on this axis it says how much DNA do those animals really have identical by descent. And this is for 1,707 Angus bulls that we've genotyped with the bovine SNP50 chip. And there are about 41,000 SNPs that are variable within Angus and used in that analysis. And so what you'll notice is that, yeah, there's a nice relationship between those, nice straight line relationship between those, but man, there's an awful lot of spread around there. So even though on average two animals are expected to have 60% of their DNA identical by descent, the reality is it can go from 40% to 70%. And that means that the relationship matrix is not perfectly characterizing the extent to which two individuals are related to each other. So what we can now do is we can take this set of mixed model equations right here where we have the pedigree relationship matrix and we can say, hey, let's come back and replace that and just put the true relatedness between individuals based upon their DNA in this relationship matrix. Now the really cool thing about this is we don't need pedigrees to do this. You don't need pedigrees. You genotype two animals, you compare them at the level of the DNA, and you know the extent to which they're related to each other. In general, because of that, the heritability of the trait increases. When I analyzed a bunch of Circle A steers for which we had marbling scores, when I used the pedigree relationship matrix, the heritability is about 40%. When I used the genomic relationship matrix based upon the DNA, the heritability jumps to 67%. The heritability increases when you truly understand the extent to which two individuals are related to each other. So the other thing is you don't have to have all of the individuals here with phenotypes. The animals that are in this vector here, the breeding value vector, just simply need to be genetically related to the animals that have EPDs. Well, that's pretty cool. Let me give you an example of how this works. That's a little small. That print's a little bit small, so I'm going to have to write it out for you. This is a study we did with 698 steers that came out of the Circle A Sire Alliance. They'd been individually fed. We collected complete data in the feedlot on those animals. We killed those animals. We got slaughter data on nearly all 698 of those individuals. We genotyped them with the bovine SNP50, and we figured out the extent to which they were related to each other. Right? And then I built a big matrix, a big genomic relationship matrix. It had my 698 Circle A steers in it, and it had 1,707 Angus bulls that span about a 50-year history of the breed. And I fit this model right here, so that's what that model represents right there. So here are my steers, they're the ones that have got data. Here are my bulls, 1,707 of them. They don't have any data, but they're genetically related to these steers. And so then what I did was estimate EPDs for all of those 1,707 Angus bulls. And guess what? I've got a set of EPDs on those animals for things like marbling and growth. And guess what? Feed intake. Average daily feed intake. And what this shows is the relationship on this axis between feed intake, breeding value of these 1,700 Angus bulls for feed intake, and on this axis for growth. And as you expect, you get a nice relationship. You know, animals that grow more tend to eat more. But if you look at that, it's not a straight line, and there are some spots that really... I can't keep my hands still. There are some spots there that are really outliers, like this bull up here. This bull up here has a really high growth EPD, but has really low feed intake. That's a really efficient animal, and in fact, that's a Circle A bull. I don't know if he's alive or dead, but if any of you've got semen on Circle A AMJ 23-0105, you might want to hang on to that and produce some bulls from them, because it sure looks like he's got a pretty good EPD for feed efficiency. 1,707 bulls, the accuracy on those bull EPDs ranged from 15% to 64%, because some of those bulls had a bunch of progeny, right? And the average accuracy in this study was 27%. So I now have an EPD for Angus for feed efficiency. Okay, it's based on 698 individuals. How many snips do you need to do this kind of thing? We did a study because there's a real problem with this thing. This chip that we're using costs $200. And if you step down in technology, the next place you hit is the ability to genotype about 1,500 snips, and it costs about $70 to do that. If you step down again, you can go to 384 snips. It's going to cost you about $10 to do that. So wouldn't it be nice if you could do this with 384 snips? So we did a study to see if you could accurately find the relationship between two animals just using 384 snips. And I'm not going to explain how this was done, but the answer is you really need 10,000. 10,000 gets you really high relationships between individuals. When you get down to 2,500 snips, the correlation's about 91%. And in fact, when you get down here to about 384 snips, the correlation's only about 30 or 40%. It's not very good. So there are some issues here in terms of cost of application of this technology. So the snip chip currently costs something like $200. It depends on the volume at which you buy them. If I were to offer you guys EPDs, molecular EPDs, for all of the traits we've talked about, everything that you generally normally get, plus feed efficiency, average daily gain, feed intake, say shear force, palatability, heparopregnancy rate, would you guys be prepared to pay, let's say, $300 for such a test? Put your hand up if you would. Yeah, so some of you would, okay? I think that's important because the industry right now, the people that are going to be getting this technology to you guys are looking at that and saying, that's going to cost us too much to do it, right? So the real issue is, can we get the cost of testing down? I'm going to come back to that. Mike already hit this. The dairy industry has shown, the Beltsville Group has shown, using this 50K chip, they can predict the genetic merit of dairy bulls with an accuracy of about 70%. To do that, they've genotyped over 6,000 animals. Anybody here got 6,000 Angus bulls in a tank? All of you together, would you have 6,000 Angus bulls in a tank that you can send me? I've got about 2,400, and I've been spending a lot of my life collecting DNA on Angus bulls. It's a real issue for us getting up to that level. It doesn't work across breeds. Mike's already said that. We've got 2,200 limousines that we've genotyped. We're developing separate tests within genotypes. We can do it across breeds, but it's going to require 6,000 or 8,000 individuals from different breeds, and it is going to require a much higher density chip. The chip that's coming down the pipe may have from 700,000 to 1,000,000 snips on it. So what do we do right now? How do we get tests develop for you guys that you can use right now? Well, instead of using, you know, randomly selected snips to figure out the extent to which animals are related, why don't we go back and look at those snips, just as Mike had shown, and say, where are the snips that are actually predicting the trait values? So don't just take random snips. Just go in and look at the snips that are most strongly associated with trait values. So what I did was we took these 1,700 Angus bulls, The Angus Association gave us the marbling EPDs and the accuracies on those bulls, and what we did was 41,028 separate tests of each snip against the marbling EPD and said which of these snips are most strongly associated with marbling. And everything above that red bar, we can be happy. Statistically, it's got significance at the genome-wide 1-in-1,000 level. There are 509 snips. Well, that's pretty cool. You know, we're down from 50,000 snips to 509 snips. Problem is, I still can't genotype 509 snips really cost effectively. When you go in and look, this is chromosome 5. These are all the snips on chromosome 5, and on this axis it says how strongly are they associated with marbling. And what you notice is that there's some really interesting patterns here. They kind of do these little straight line effects like that, right? So even though on this particular graph there are 57 snips above the line that are associated with marbling, a lot of them are predicting the same thing. And that is because there are really only about 4 or 5 genes that influence marbling on this chromosome that have large effects, and lots of the snips that are around them are detecting the same effect. They say, ooh, there's a gene here. And if you just want to kind of draw some lines in, so look, it looks like there's probably a gene right there somewhere, another one right there, another one there. There's probably one right there. It just didn't hit the line. Just didn't get above the line. There's 5 or 6 genes on this chromosome that are associated with marbling. So what we did was try to figure out a way that we could take all of the significant SNPs and collapse it down. Can we find just the one SNP that's predictive of each of those genes? And to do this, we built basically a statistical approach called forward selection, where we pick the most significant one, put that one in the model, and then resweep the chromosome and see what's going on. And when you do that, you're able to collapse it down to the 4 or 5 most significant SNPs on the chromosome that explain variation in marbling EPD. And what that gets us to in this Angus population is 129 SNPs explain about 60% of the variation in EPD in the discovery population. Same thing with those steers, 698 steers that have feed intakes. It turns out that there are 31 SNPs that explain 46% of the variation in feed intake in the discovery population. But Mike's already pointed out that what you explain in the discovery population is not always what you discover in an independent population of cattle. We've got to take this to the streets. We've got to try it out and see whether or not it works when we get it to the streets. So there is a group of people working really hard to get this done so that we can get this commercialized to the industry. The guys from the Angus Association, Donald Nakumura from Igenity, whom I saw right back there, who's done quite a lot of this work, led a lot of this work. And then Dorian, who will be speaking after me, who's been acting as an independent validator of these data. He's taken these data, the models that we've built, and he has said, if we look at the way you select SNPs, does it work as well as the way I can select SNPs, and how much of the variation can we explain in independent populations? 2 independent populations. So we genotyped 1,707 Angus bulls, and we built our models to predict EPDs in that 1,700 bulls. Genotyped another 275 bulls. We got their EPDs from the Angus Association, and then we said, let's predict their EPDs based upon the model that we built back in those 1,700 bulls, and let's see how good a job we did of it. It's a little far away. The things that are really important are the things in parentheses. What is in each row is a different way of picking SNPs. What is in each column is the number of SNPs that were picked. So what's the best 50 SNPs that explain variation in marbling? If it was selected using the forward selection approach that I showed you, or some other statistical approaches, and you'll see Bayes in there, right, because things are all becoming Bayesian these days. Different ways of picking the SNPs. Here's the 50 SNPs. In brackets, how much of the variation did we explain in this independent group of 275 bulls? You probably can't see it real well, but the brackets are about 30%. This is not the correlation between the two breeding values. It's the correlation squared between the two breeding values. So if the correlation squared is 30%, the correlation is about nearly 60%. Between the two sets of EPDs, right? So correlation squared, I want to point that out. So the correlation squared is about 30%. That's pretty good. We then went and took the 698 steers. Now, these steers are really genetically quite different to the 275 Angus bulls because they come out of the breeding program that's very specific to the Circle A Sire Alliance. So the pedigrees are all different on these animals, and I would not have expected the validation to have worked as well in that group of animals, and the bottom line is it didn't. But the correlation squared is still about 20%. We still explain 20% of the genetic variance in marbling in a bunch of steers when we used a bunch of bulls that weren't really related to the sires that sired those steers, right? There are 85 sires that sired those steers, but we used 1,707 that represent pretty much everything that's Angus in North America to build that prediction model. So that was 20%. We think that's pretty exciting. So then what we did was we said, okay, let's get all of these SNPs. We can sell a test based on 384 SNPs at a dollar value that you guys can afford. I don't know what that dollar value is going to be because I'm not the one selling the test. Donald and Igenity are going to be the ones that are going to be selling this test. But it doesn't require that I spend $200 to buy that chip, right? The chip is going to be somewhere like about $10. I don't know what that final price is, but it's going to be a lot less than the 50K chip, but it's only got 384 SNPs on it. So what's the best 384 SNPs? Well, let's go and select SNPs that explain variation in marbling. Let's do ribeye area, let's do carcass weight, let's do heifer pregnancy rate. Let's put some traits on here that are important, and let's pick the best 100 SNPs that affect all of those traits. Let's dovetail them together, come up with a set of 384. When you do that, and you build a 384 set of SNPs, the correlation squared between breeding values in the 275 AI sires ranges from about 35% for marbling down to 10% for back fat. I'll just read these. I don't know if you can see them. First trait is marbling, 35%. Second trait is back fat, 10%. Ribeye area, 33%. Carcass weight, 19%. Heifer pregnancy, 15%. Yearling weight, 12%. So that's how much of the variation we can explain, the genetic variation we can explain with one test with 384 SNPs on it. When we did the same validation over here in the 698 steers, the R-squareds, in fact, that's marbling and ribeye area, the R-squareds are even higher in that population. So the bottom line is, I think we've got tests coming out pretty quickly that you guys are going to be able to use that are going to explain something like 30% of the variation in a lot of these traits. Muriel will announce when they're going to release this test, but I know that the reagents are being built right now. Illumina is building this thing for them right now. We've been pretty careful about validation. We've had Dorian and the Iowa State group independently look at everything that we've produced to make sure that it looks like it's right, that it works. And Muriel and AGI are going to be working to take other results that have been developed based upon the 50K chip, not only at Missouri, but all around the US, to actually bring to the marketplace fairly soon. What I've talked about extensively is the work that we've done in Angus. I've genotyped something like 8,000 Angus animals now at Missouri, and we've genotyped 18,000 in total, and so it includes a lot of other breeds. As I said, we've got about 2,200 limousines, but we've got Charolais, we've got Herefords, we've got Simmentals, as well in that population that we've genotyped, and we have all kinds of traits, including Warner Brat. We have 3,900 animals that have Warner Brats or shear force, and they've all been genotyped. So we're going to be bringing out this sort of product for those kinds of traits, I think, very quickly. They're going to, at the first point, I think, be breed specific, and Mike pointed out why. When you jump from one breed to the next, yeah, the LD is about the same, but what happens is the phase relationships get shuffled up. So those little SNPs on the chromosomes, and he showed that the C was often associated with the plus in one breed, can be the other way around in another breed. So your prediction model doesn't get it right when you jump between breeds for exactly that reason. So we've got the animals genotyped, I think, to be able to build a crossbreed test. The problem is I think 50,000 SNPs is not going to be enough to do it. And as I said, this 1 million SNP chip I think is about a year away. So I think we'll be in a position within about a year that tests can be developed that will actually go right across breeds. So it's important, I think, now that two things happen. Number one is, please, 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 somebody build a DNA repository for beef cattle breeds. All right, start collecting samples of straws of semen and get that to a point where it can be used, because we're going to have thousands of animals on each breed to make this stuff work right. And I don't want to spend the rest of my life on the phone to breeders and AI companies and scouring the world to try to rake up DNA samples on bulls that have EPDs. You guys need to do that. Okay, there is an initiative in Missouri right now that's led by Rex Rickett. We have a $12 million request into the state to get funds to build a beef cattle center for excellence. And a big part of that request is to put a DNA repository in place. So there'll be people there to put that'll put databases in, that'll put freezers in, take that semen and store it. But you guys need to get the ball rolling on collecting that. The second thing you need to do is to be thinking about what are the traits that are really important that we can apply with this technology, because I'm telling you, it's here. It's here now in the beef industry. It's already in the dairy industry. By the end of the year, people in this audience are going to be buying tests, and they're going to be getting EPDs on animals at birth based upon DNA profiles. So with that, thank you very much.